The vote tomorrow is whether you want to break and sever every link. And I say, let's keep our UK pension, let's keep our UK pound, let's keep our UK passport, let's keep our UK welfare state. And let us tell the undecided, the waverers, those not sure how to vote, let us tell them what we have achieved together. We fought two world wars together. And there is not a cemetery in Europe that does not have Scots, English, Welsh and Irish lying side by side. And when young men were injured in these wars, they didn't look to each other and ask whether you were Scots or English. They came to each other's aid because we were part of a common cause. And let us tell also those people who've been told unfairly by the nationalists that if you vote no, you're a less than patriotic Scot. Tell them this is our Scotland. Tell them that Scotland does not belong to the SNP. Scotland does not belong to the Yes campaign. Scotland does not belong to any politician, Mr. Salmon, Mr. Swinney, me or any other politician. Scotland belongs to all of us.
Well, the spring is back in his step, but will the moods return? Here to walk with us is Steve Richards of The Independent. Welcome, Steve Richards.
Hello,
Pat. And Fraser, you can finish your coffee. And Fraser Nelson of The Spectator. Hello, Fraser.
Good morning.
Steve Richards, is this a believable brown bounce?
Oh, yeah, completely. And you see, although the oratory seemed fresh and new, in some respects, there were echoes with his career. I mean, first of all, that speech, which kind of did, I think, make an important impact at the end of the campaign, the arguments were very cleverly framed. And at his peak, say in the early 90s, when he had to reframe Labour's economic policies as Shadow Chancellor, he framed them very, very cleverly to win the economic argument when Labour had lost the economic argument for decades. Similarly, he was an orator in the 80s, you know, there was his oratory again. I think what happened in between, and we heard some of that in the clips that you played.
And I'll come back to the past, but just the present.
In terms of the present, clearly he is a central figure now in delivering what was promised. So, yeah, he is a player in all of this.
Fraser Nelson, do you agree with that? This has put him back.
Certainly. I mean, until a few weeks ago, Gordon Brown was remembered as an unelected prime minister whose main achievement was surviving the numerous attempts by his party to depose him. I mean, now he's being hailed in some circles as the man who saved the country. And the speech he gave last Wednesday was one of the best I've ever heard him give.
We know you're not a fan, really, of his.
No.
Did it make your spine tingle, even though you loathe him?
I will confess that I started watching the speech expecting it to be kind of typical Gordon Brown machine gun statistics, but I have to admit he put passion and force back into the debate.
Okay.
I mean, passion, which until a few days ago George Galloway was the number one passion provider. Now it was Gordon Brown. I welcomed him back. I never thought I'd be so pleased to see Gordon Brown.
So now we go back in time. Damien McBride, his former spin doctor, is writing in the Mail on Sunday today, traipsing around his back garden in Kirkcaldy last summer, he would bark down his mobile phone about the mistakes being made. Steve, how low was the low for this man?
Well, you conjured up some of it during the 2010 general election campaign. One of the many ironies of his fascinating career is that he ached to be prime minister. And when he was prime minister, for all kinds of reasons, he found himself to be virtually powerless. Last week, he had more power than David Cameron in reshaping Scotland. So I think the lows were very low. But unlike most people who are leaders in waiting, he did get the leadership. So there were sort of quite a few highs en route, but I don't think he ever felt euphoria. He was basically kind of instinctively miserable. But I mean, there were some highs en route.
And how low after office, Fraser Nelson, do you think he has sunk?
Well, he's sunk off the radar. I mean, a lot of ex-premiers, like Tony Blair, can command huge amounts of money giving speeches, being asked about their thoughts on the future of the nation. Gordon Brown has been churning out little red books, turning up to sort of low-key kind of Arab venues, talking about things nobody cares about. And I think he really has found here. a new vacation. It's almost like an Ian Duncan Smith style revival. And I think that Gordon Brown will now emerge as probably the public face of Labour in Scotland. I suspect they'll use him at the next election to win back all of these wavering Labour voters. The question is whether he can stop himself picking fights with Tories, because I suspect he will be making complaints if David Cameron isn't delivering on the pledge. But Alex Salmond says he's not.
It is interesting, though, how people struggle to find a public voice that works for them. And it's interesting, I was trying to think of an equivalent and to Gordon Brown, and another one that came to mind is Neil Kinnock, who was a vivacious, ebullient figure before he got the leadership of the Labour Party and then became a sort of a bank manager trying to reassure. Gordon Brown did a bit of that when he became Shadow Chancellor in 92. Basically, all the way along then, he was in a sort of tonal straitjacket and has been liberated by discovering a cause. And then you find your authentic public voice. And I think politicians, a lot of them struggle to find their voice. And it is linked to whether you can find a cause that works for you. And he's found one in this.
MSP, David Torrance, has said that his reputation is in tartan tatters because he appears to have basically put himself in the role of Prime Minister. Fraser Nelson, has Gordon Brown stolen the role of Prime Minister by leading the vow before the vote and now his bounce afterwards?
Well, when he was making all these promises, you did wonder under whose authority is he saying that he's going to have this timetable? Did he have the backing of David Cameron? As I understand it, he didn't. David Cameron said afterwards that he had told Ted privately that he had no idea where Brown got this timetable from, that he was bouncing his own agenda into the debate. But the Tories were so desperate, they would sign up to anything Gordon Brown did. So he is positioning himself now as being the man who's going to deliver these promises. And it will be interesting to see if he manages to do so. I mean, he has tried so many other roles since leaving office. He had this, you know, Gordon and Sarah Brown Foundation to give money to charity. That didn't take off. But here, as the man who understands the Constitution and wants to rework the union, I think he has found an IDS-style return from the political dead.
And not all our listeners welcome IDS. IDS's return, do they? I mean, he's controversial now. Will Gordon Brown remain ultimately mercurial, Steve Richards? Will the mood return? The thundercloud will be back?
Well, given the complexity of the task that he has now set himself, there will be inevitably thunderclouds en route as well. I can tell you that. And there were in recent weeks, I gather. But he has now a cause. And as far as I can tell, he's leading it. I mean, he was out there yesterday making clear that this timetable will be met. We shall see.
And thank you very much. We've heard. Thank you both, Fraser Nelson and Steve Richards. Very nice to hear you again.